Hello, welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's still winter here in Britain, but it's very warm today, but windy. So we've chosen to walk along the old railway track in Wolverhampton. There's lots of trees around us, so we're hoping that it'll cut out the wind. And if you'd listened to one of our previous recordings where Pete was mugged by ducks down the canal, which was very, very loud, we may avoid the duck mugging as well using this route. Anyway, so this is a surprise question or a surprise statement today. I said, "Oh, what do you want to talk about today, Pete?" And he said, "Oh, surprise me." So that's what I'm going to do. This is actually a conversation that we've had a long time ago that I found really useful. So I'm hoping you'll find it useful and interesting as well. So this is about the idea of healthy thought. What is healthy thought? Is there such a thing as healthy thought? This came about because just talked to a lot of people and they mentioned how their minds can go round and round in tight little, sometimes paranoid circles, anxious, uncomfortable, and in the end they don't get anywhere. So this was the stimulus for talking about this talk a long time ago when we did it last time, and I thought we came up with a really good conclusion. I thought we could, which Pete doesn't remember, but I do. So it'd be interesting to see if we get to that same conclusion again.
I don't have any recollection of thinking about it.
It was probably about 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we were walking around the park talking about this. Yeah.
I am very interested in the idea of health and what exactly that means.
Healthy thought.
And thought, very interesting.
Because we have just done a series about thinking about thinking.
Yeah.
This sort of tags on to that, really.
Yeah.
And this is a bit more about, again, thinking about thinking and how to... It's a bit more practical, a bit more how to think. And how to use thought in a way which is useful to you, because...
Would you say that's what healthy means, then? Because I'd be inclined to sort of interrogate the notion of health.
Yes, that's where we would begin.
Yeah, with respect, particularly with respect to thought, healthy thought's got this kind of weird Victorian guilt trip smell about it.
Yes.
Hasn't it? It's a bit like if you masturbate, you'll go blind scenario.
Well, just a tad, maybe, yeah. Healthy thought, I know that we'd want to begin by determining what we mean by healthy, and then what is healthy thought to start off with, And then is it possible? I mean, does healthy thought exist?
Yeah. Well, I'm inclined to think that today, at least, the notion healthy thought is just deeply suspect.
Yes.
It sounds ideological.
Yeah.
To me.
There probably is a better way to express it. Let's see if we can come up with something.
At the same time as the notion of healthy thought probably wouldn't survive an analysis of its ideological uses and content. Nobody would trust the notion again, I don't think, if you did that.
Yeah.
At the same time, there probably are some modes of thought that are going to make you suffer.
Yeah.
Because we both
recognise that there are ways, because we've seen it and probably experienced it ourselves, of what one could describe as unhealthy thought that actually makes things worse, makes you more paranoid, makes you more anxious, make you make really bad decisions in your life.
Sure.
And that would, you'd have to think to yourself, well, perhaps that thought wasn't really so great.
Mm.
So
on the other hand, you could argue, I'm just being very contrarian to that, but you could argue that the best kind of thought is the thought that makes you suffer. And some people would definitely...
How so?
Some people definitely would argue that, you know. Well, there's like a moral virtue in suffering, isn't there, you know?
Yes.
Penance, whatever, you know. Sure, penance, for instance, is painful.
Right.
But if you were a Christian, it'd be the most virtuous thing you could do. So there's this connection between a mode of thought that's that causes suffering, but which somehow has virtue and is good, inverted commas. This is a very common pattern in human culture and in religious belief. Of course, Nietzsche was always going on about great health, you know, health and sickness. He used a kind of a binary health and sickness with which to judge.
Yeah.
Modes of thought, actually. Modes of thought. Modes of thought and types of thought. And also with which to evaluate particular stories, narratives about the world and about human beings.
Yeah.
Well, he describes Spinoza, for instance, in his way of thinking about time as somehow sick, you know, as actually the symptom of a sickness, of a kind of a faint-heartedness, or a failure to accept the hardness of life, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And that's one kind of track in Nietzsche's thought that I've always suspected and found a little bit. It's not wishy-washy. His account of it's quite robust, but it's there's something fishy about it. And that is the feeling I get. You know, there's something fishy about this. Why is he doing this? You know.
But just going back to what you were saying about suffering.
Yeah.
Because thinking always seems to, you know, thought is haunted by utopia.
Yeah.
You know,
that means it's haunted by suffering, isn't it?
Yes.
Thought is haunted by suffering.
It always seems to come down to, well, how can we not suffer? You know, be either me personally or humans in general or both.
Yeah.
So in regards to suffering, I know this may not be everyone's definition of healthy thoughts, or there's a quotation marks around there, for me, if I was going to define healthy thought, I would say that it reduced suffering, either just on a personal level or on a wider level.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, it's all right if anyone disagrees with me on that point, but that would be where I was going with that definition.
Yeah. It's quite a good direction to go in with that, I think. Even despite what I said, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, allowing for the idea that there is some kind of worthwhile suffering or certain kind of suffering that will pay off in some way.
Yeah.
Well, we won't discount that, but...
Well, perhaps we could say healthy thought helps to eliminate unnecessary suffering.
Yeah. I suppose you could get a paint the picture as well of unhealthy thought or.
Yeah, and then contrast that. Well, if we were going to have unhealthy thought, and let's say under unhealthy thought cause suffering.
Yeah.
To you, to the person. Or to the whole world, like somebody who did think, I'm in a bad mood, let's just press the button, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, their thought process led to just nuclear war, right?
Yeah.
So suffering just for the person,
or
for more people, or the whole world, okay? So.
Because the other thing that kind of thought brings, the other consequence it invites is disempowerment.
Yeah, which is suffering in
which
itself.
Which is its own kind
of
suffering, but it's a particular kind of suffering, disempowerment. Yeah. So there's something about healthy thought which is kind of efficient, in the sense that it can empower us. In other words, and thought's going to empower you when it has some kind of purchase on what we call reality. You know, the world that appears to be independent of us.
Yeah.
that we have to deal with as human beings, with such activities as farming and industry and building dwellings and so forth.
Yeah.
The whole kind of practical sphere. So healthy thought's got a practicality that comes out of its ability to reflect in predictive ways so-called reality, or reality if you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's got this pragmatic dimension, healthy thought, I think. So also, I would say, I mean, getting Nietzsche in here again, you know, where is binary, conceptual binary, health and sickness, is a little bit useful, is that it tells us that healthy thought is very energetic. It doesn't have a lot of friction in it.
That's nice.
It's got movement. It's energetic. There's the energy to entertain.
Yeah.
And test out audacious.
And certainly.
Direction. It's creative. It's creative because it's energetic. It's also creative.
To say something there, certainly about. Energy and thinking, mm-hmm. I have certainly noticed myself that when my energy is low, my thinking becomes compromised, and I actually end up thinking it's a bit of an exaggeration to say self-harming thoughts, but not self-harming in the sense of I'm going to stab myself in the leg, but self-harming in the sense of and that happened thinking the worst and looking at things in a really pessimistic way.
That's sort of quite like it's like a symptom of not having enough mental energy, mental physical energy. It's the same. Yeah.
I've really noticed that.
Paranoia and melancholia are all.
To the point where I've now made the decision that when I'm tired, I actually decide not to think about anything.
Yeah.
Because I know whatever I think will be crap.
Yeah.
Right? So I recognise it in myself. Yeah. I'm just too tired for this.
I think you can apply that more widely as well. I mean, just as a matter of personal mental hygiene, this is like, if you do use your brain, it's the equivalent of cleaning your teeth. a basics of that is just to discover which brain mode is best suited to particular tasks for you.
Yeah.
You know, and you say when you feel like your energy's run out, there's no point thinking because the thinking's skewish.
Yeah.
It's certainly not useful because it stops meshing with reality in any kind of way.
Yeah.
Stops helping us to picture reality and do stuff about it. And it tends to be go pessimistic or paranoid.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, or just depressed. Depression's, yeah. You know, bottled up energy in it in some ways.
Yeah.
Crystallised energy, we keep saying this, don't we?
Yeah.
It's an old tantric idea. Whereas I would say healthy thought comes out of having quite a free flow of energy.
Yeah.
But and healthy thought does help you to discern, for instance, that this is not a good time to sit down and write my essay on logic.
Yeah.
This is a good time to get drunk.
Yeah.
This is not a good time to get drunk.
Yeah.
This is a good time to try and read that book. This is not a good time, etc.
Yeah.
This is a good time to go and have it out with my friend who argued with me.
Yeah.
Etc. You know, and there's like a kind of a discernment.
Yeah.
Just of how your own organism works. I think there's just some kind of intelligence, wisdom, self-preservation in having a bit of a clue how your own organism works.
Absolutely.
As you.
Yeah.
Not in any kind of a general anatomical textbook, nosological kind of way, but just through intimate connection with yourself.
Yeah.
Just through, yeah, not necessarily a kind of a painstaking self-psychoanalysis or self-punitive moulding procedure.
Just a basic sensitivity.
Just a basic sensitivity, yeah, that's it.
And once you have got that, it does become obvious, as you said.
Right.
When you're in the right mood or frame of mind, or the organism is flowing in such a way to do certain things or not to do certain things.
Yeah.
And coming back to suffering, personally, I find that being able to link into that, and even though you might feel a great urgency to go and, you know, have it out with your friend who you had an argument with or whatever, you just kind of know that you're tired and you're grumpy and it will go badly.
It will go badly.
If you do it right now.
It will go badly.
You know, or I don't know, the period's just started.
It will go badly, my dear.
Yes.
It will go badly.
It's a good time to do it right now.
Yeah.
So.
But we are idiots, and we.
But is that,
you can also forgive yourself for getting it wrong. Let's get that into place.
Absolutely.
You don't have a notion like healthy thoughts becoming a cudgel with which you can beat yourself up with when you have what is then deemed to be an unhealthy thought.
But
there is some kinds of thought that are more fun, more useful, more creative than others. And being able to employ them as a human individual is comes out to having a bit of an idea of how your own organism works. Through a little bit of easeful and non-obsessive and awareness. Just awareness of life, of life unfolding.
And the
whatever your life is.
Experimentation as well. You know, if you really want to test that out, wait till you're pretty sure now is the wrong time to go and do something, and go and do it and see if you were right.
Well, but be a bit careful with it, will you?
We
hereby repudiate any liability.
Don't try this at home.
Do not sue. Do not try this at home. Especially if it's to do with jumping off high buildings and things like that.
Don't
go there. Don't go there. You can't fly, honestly.
So just to come at it from the other end. What would we say is unhealthy thought? So far we've got to the point where we feel
when you've got the wrong mode trying to do a job it can't do very well.
So
there might be a place for melancholia in life. I'm sure there is. But trying to organise a major company while you're in a melancholic attack could prove disastrous, shouldn't it? So it's not like the melancholia is a source of guilt feelings or anything like that, because it's unhealthy. It's just use it for the wrong job, then it's unhealthy. That would be my kind of persuasive definition of unhealthy.
So if we were
like
to have the definition of healthy thought being thought that eased, reduced or eliminated unnecessary suffering, perhaps you could say that unhealthy thought produced, caused, encouraged suffering. So if we were going to bring it always down to suffering.
But also to appropriateness. You know. So a melancholy thought could be healthy or unhealthy, is what I'm saying.
Down
to appropriateness, which is not an idea you can tease out without thinking about actual practical usefulness. So you end up being a bit like a pragmatist, you know. But a lot of the evaluations that we make in life, you know, like healthy or unhealthy, they sort of do reduce down to a kind of pragmatism and to the practical sphere. This is where they kind of get their meaning and their mode of working.
And this is why
within
you can
discourse
actually produce very unhealthy thought. And this is an odd thing that I'm going to say, but I think it's perfectly possible to have very unhealthy thought when you're really, really happy. Because when you're kind of totally blissed out and happy, perhaps your perception of reality could be a little bit dimmed. and a little bit dim there, and
well, yeah, I'm sure
you could easily like rush off into a really, really bad decision that could mess up your life.
Yeah, euphoria is no measure of wisdom.
No. No. So just because you're happy does not necessarily mean you're having healthy thought by any means. And that's why what
nice
you were saying about
though.
It is nice to be happy. Yeah, it's about the the melancholia. Well, you know, you can have really good thoughts in those.
Yeah. It's very it's
more indigo moods.
Yeah.
Can't you?
Yeah. The sort of the Renaissance wallers. I'm thinking of Dürer in particular, in the part of the German Renaissance artist. He thought that melancholy, which is a kind of blue mood, sadness perhaps, you know, but it's got a blue, like you say, indigo and Prussian blue depth to it.
Yeah.
It was ruled by the planet Saturn. Who is in the mythology like the god of time, you know?
Yeah.
And he's quite a dark character in the Greek mythology, you know, Saturn.
Yeah.
Melancholy is ruined by Saturn. And that it was thought to be the most creative mood.
Yeah.
I think in modern times we've got the blues, you know, she's a totally wonderful, malleable, stimulating and relatively simple art form.
Yeah.
That's just extremely fertile. But we kind of value exuberance as well, I think, you know, as a sort of creative mood par excellence. Perhaps, I don't know.
And this round to the conclusion that we came to last time, which I'm going to pop up here and then you can see what you think.
All right.
A few years on. Right. Our definition of healthy thought, the last time we had this conversation a few years ago, was that healthy thought was a many-perspectived clarity. And that's what we were just talking about. It's like maybe thinking about the same thing when you're in a indigo mood, when you're in a yellow mood, when you're in an orange mood, when you're in a black mood. And embracing all those perspectives, but being... Again, because you're sensitive to your own organism, you can have a clarity.
Yeah.
You can understand.
Yeah.
And those perspectives a bit more deeply. And then those perspectives can all talk to each other.
Yeah.
And then decide what's going on, what should we do, how should we approach this, how are we going to put this thought to bed, or do we need to think about it some more or not?
Yeah.
That's what we thought last time. So how do you think about that now?
I think we should sort of said something like that, but without remembering all that stuff about perspectivism. Yeah. We just didn't. But we did actually talk about that.
Yeah.
Without using that vocabulary.
Yeah.
To some extent, yeah, we did.
Because I think. If we were defining unhealthy thought as something that would encourage or cause suffering, if one thinks about something, especially if it's something important, not just what am I going to have for dinner, but something important that's going to have an effect on your life or the lives of other people, if you think about something from only one perspective, just one, the likelihood is... that is going to be
unhealthy
and have a very poor outcome.
Yeah, well, as is well known, the word health comes from the same root as the word hail, you know, as in he was hail and hearty old man, you know, which comes from the same root as whole. So healthy thought is thought that's whole. So unhealthy thought would be thought there isn't all, that's fragmented.
Yes.
And this is precisely the project of Patanjali's yoga.
Yeah.
Is to access the wholeness of whole thought as a counter to the fragmentation of unhealthy thought. You know, that's not too too distant a stretch for Patanjali, you know?
Yeah.
Especially in the first part of the Yoga Sutra. Because the word yoga itself means bringing the parts together, yoking, you know,
yeah,
harnessing the forces together.
Yeah.
And you do that with the human psyche through attempting to entertain the different perspectives available to you.
Yeah.
And perhaps to find some new ones.
Yeah.
You know, because you know the whole, the healthy, the hale, the that which enjoys yoga, the yoga being state, is that which has got all these perspectives.
Yeah.
At least at its disposal, you know.
And as I say, the important thing, bringing them together, because I know that I've talked to people and they've had so many perspectives on it,
yeah,
that they just drown
you
in
can
their
do that,
perspectives,
yeah,
because their perspectives don't come together. They yeah don't really, they just, it's like,
well, that's just chaos there, don't
you? Instead of having many perspectives, yeah, they're just, as you said, fragmented and
fragmentation.
And there's a bit of thought going on over here saying yeah something completely yeah different to that bit of thought yeah that's going
that's
on
kind
over
of,
there.
That's the human condition yes in yeah most civilizations. Cause it,
but that's why we tacked on yeah the clarity, many yeah perspectived clarity,
that's
rather
why
than just
clarity
leaving it as many perspectives.
No, there's a clarity and there's an accord, you know, because
yeah
it's yoga. You know, I mean, you can have contrary thoughts and opposite thoughts, different, you know, opposing perspectives, but it's that they don't have to kind of reconcile, but they have to be embraced. You have to embrace them. It's not a kind of a trying to combine a compromise between all the perspectives. It's about just embracing all the perspectives.
Yeah.
So they are all of a piece.
Yeah.
You know. But there's a lot of dynamism in that.
Yes, there is.
There's a lot of dynamism, and this is where the energy comes in.
Yeah.
You know, it both produces that dynamism and energy at the same time as needing it.
Yeah,
yeah. This is why you've got to meditate, otherwise you'll go mad.
Yeah. And then once you have all these, I mean, just going back to tantric art.
Yeah,
and
well,
paintings that I've done myself that have depict somebody with many heads.
Oh yes.
I used to think that doing yoga would help me to become, I've heard this word wholeness.
Yeah.
I'm going to be whole. I'm going to be like, I felt I would become, yeah, one steady point.
Yeah, yeah.
But what actually happened was I became a many-headed being.
Yeah.
Where I was lots of points all at once, but yeah one point as well.
Yeah, but all belonging to a single being.
Yeah.
Many heads all belonging
many,
to a
many,
single
many
being.
Many heads, yeah. Yeah. And that's why you see this.
We're all looking in different directions, and
yes
that, and animal heads and
yeah
serpent heads and human yeah heads and male heads and female heads and
yeah
god and goddess heads and.
Yeah, and this is why they did paintings like that, because
yeah,
they were trying to depict what we're talking about now,
yeah,
about
well,
the many perspectives.
They brought some awareness to bear on their organism.
Yeah.
And did some art.
Yeah.
two things that go pretty well together.
Yeah. And once
and it's which are things which for a lot of people are healthy things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, just on the level of, you know, physical health, the kind of stuff that sends you scurrying to doctors and so forth. I mean, it strikes me that for a lot of people, if they don't exercise their creativity, which has this anti-fragmental character, you know, doing art, being creative is anti-fragmental, just like penicillin is antibacterial.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to do some art. You've got to find out what it is.
Yeah.
That you can that you can express. You can channel this the energy into. That's healthy. I think there's just an enormous role in the notion of health for that.
Yeah.
Don't matter what it is. They're saying everybody's got to go and be a poet or a painter. It's whatever means.
Yeah.
That life wants to send out through them.
Yeah.
You know, by them being themselves, being self-aware of themselves. Just that.
And just another little aside about the many-headed thing. When we've been talking about thinking in these past few episodes, we've been talking about how useful it is to think, but also how useful it is to not think.
Yeah, yeah.
To be quiet and still and peaceful in your mind.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely vital.
But something that's been really just coming to my attention much more over the years is how there's a very special kind of thinking that goes on in deep meditation.
Certainly,
people describe it as silence and stillness.
Yeah.
But it's a very dynamic place, actually.
It is, yeah.
And this many-headed thing, you can be massively surprised because you do your meditation and it's peaceful and it's quiet, and suddenly all these heads just pop out. That's what happens to me.
Yes, you're crazy, of course. You're crazy.
Or you suddenly remember where you put your glasses 3 years ago. It accesses some deep part of your mind that wasn't available to you before.
Yeah, sure.
And that's, you know, and you're not trying to think about a particular thing. Or the next chapter for your book will just pop in fully formed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Without even, you are not thinking about it. It just comes.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's something going on, but it's like that fertile silence. All this stuff is there.
Indeed. It'll be in the DSM. Many-headed personality disorder. And it'll go into fashion for a bit, you know, and there'll be articles about it in the Mail on Sunday and shit like that, you know.
Yeah.
And it'll be all over the internet.
Passing someone, cutting their head.
And then it'll become a moral cudgel.
Yeah.
Either you haven't got enough heads or you've got too many heads, whichever way the dice lands, really.
Yeah. So, how would we identify unhealthy thought if somebody's having a problem with whatever it is they're having a problem with and they're listening to this and thinking, well, how am I going to know if I'm having...
Well, you
unhealthy thought.
Yeah. Well, you get spirals. But not only spirals.
Are they more like circles than spirals?
Well, yeah. You get kind of a fixed turbulence. It's got circly, spirally turbulence.
That's quite sterile, isn't it?
That's sterile. It doesn't produce anything. It doesn't create anything.
Yeah. And you just keep coming round back to the same thing over and over
again. And it can be kind of destructive.
Yeah.
Things like that can be destructive without themselves actually destroying anything, just simply by sucking your energy.
Yeah.
So you don't do things that need doing. You don't inquire into things that need inquiring into because all your energy is sucked into an obsessive...
Because you're just going round in a tight circle,
repetitious spiral.
You're just missing lots of things.
That's what the word vritti means in the Yoga Sutra, you know, like spirals, you know, vortexes.
Yeah.
So endless circlings.
Well, that would certainly be one way to spot it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And if you know that... Perhaps that would be all that would be needed to be able to break the circle, is to step back from it and recognise that this is unhealthy thought, or this is going nowhere, or this is a waste of time and energy.
Yeah.
However you want to, whatever phrase you want with that, maybe that's what you need, that's all you need to be able to step back from it. But usually it has an emotional component as well.
Yeah.
Which is like driving the circle round and round.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
maybe just knowing that you are going round and round would be enough to decide to stop.
Can be.
I mean, I've done it. You know, especially when you're in a bad mood or you're angry or whatever. It's like, you know, you do rah 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 rah.
It's funny. It's funny in the realm of sort of psychological suffering that. We don't do the thing that we do in the realm of physical suffering. For instance, if you put your hand in the gas flame on the cooker, you'd quickly withdraw it.
Yeah.
Because you'd know it was making you suffer, and was actually kind of damaging the integrity of your organism. You just know that in an instant, your body would know that in an instant. Yeah. And your arm would jerk away.
Yeah.
But you can kind of become insensitive in psychic life.
Yeah.
And actually you just do keep, just hold your hand in the flame there. And
yeah. That's a good way of putting it, way of putting it, yeah.
Because we do actually get desensitised, you know, the way education works, or mostly, unfortunately, is not to sensitise and open up areas, but to desensitise,
yeah,
to produce functionaries in an economy.
Yeah.
A really multifaceted human being can't be a functionary in a slave economy, you know.
So. No.
So, there's a problem around that, you know. But I don't think you need to have, on that basis, a programme of sensitisation. I think the sensitivity is still there. And the how becomes a matter of allowing it to express itself.
Yeah.
It's an allowing thing.
Yeah.
Allowing the sensitivity to happen.
Yeah, because the sensitivity to yourself is always present.
Yeah.
It's just that, and that's another thing, the unhealthy thought, as you said, exactly that it does to yourself. It obscures and dampens down your sensitivity to yourself, where you will continually damage yourself by going round and round in circles, causing yourself pain.
Yeah, and wasting your energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just recognising that you actually are already sensitive to
yourself. Yeah, and allowing as best you can.
Yeah.
It's an adventure as well.
Yeah.
Because you will back off to the time and you say, well, I can't act this. Well, okay, today you can't act, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to become a moral cultivation.
No.
Just a way of life that immediately reveals the fascination and glory and the grandeur of human life. Immediately that is revealed.
Yeah.
Once you just even allow a little bit.
Yeah.
Or you said, well, this is how I'm going to go about things.
Yeah.
Little tiny. It's not even a resolve.
Okay. So many perspectived clarity. I think it's still
highly recommended.
Highly recommended.
Well, at least to have a stab, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you find that useful. And I think we've come to the end of our walk now. So we'll be seeing you again. Or. Speaking to you again, certainly.
Yes. Over and out. Roger. Copy that.